It is 1:34. We'll call it.
Pardon?
Okay. 1:34, the 7th day of February, 2012. We have all members present. Representative Garrett will be back in, so we will call everybody here because I think he said he'd be here shortly. We have before us just one bill. The previous bill we heard yesterday wasn't ready for prime time. It'll come back. 118 will come back when the departments are better prepared to answer questions fully. So that's a we do our best to have try to move bills out if they're ready, but sometimes departments will conspire against themselves. So I guess that's a good instruction early on in the process, Mr. Co-Chair. Today we have an Arctic policy will not be up today. We put it on pending referral, not trying to second-guess the judgment of the Speaker and his referral powers, but only to be ready in case it was referred here. Here that's Mr. Speaker. So today we just have House Bill 298, certain exemptions from the mining tax. Why don't we – we do have committee substitute before us. I'd like to bring our staff up and briefly exchange the CS before us, and then we'll invite the sponsor up. You can move the CS, Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I move for adoption CS House Bill number 298 Finance, version 27-LS1263/B, Bullock 2612.
And I'll object for discussion from staff, and please mention any changes to the fiscal notes, although we'll deal with fiscal notes later.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Joe Michelle, staff to co-chairman Representative Bill Stoltz. The CS in front of you, CS or House Bill 298, there was one change made, and it had to do with the effective date. The effective date on page 2, line 6, has been changed from July 1st, 2012, to January 1st, 2012. Thinking being if this is a good bill now, it should be a good bill at the beginning of the year. That directly affected the fiscal note. In FY13, the original cost of the department was going to be $150,000, but moving that back to the first of the year, that took the first of the year into account, and that was moved up to reflect the full year of $300,000.
And the change to the there was no change to the DNR fiscal impact.
There was no change to the DNR fiscal note.
Okay, any questions for Mr. Michelle? Representative Dugan.
Mr. Chairman, when we say the cost to the department, we're talking about foregone revenue. Is that right?
Through the chair, Representative Dugan. It is foregone revenue, yes.
Yeah, and we want clarity on that, and that's appreciate that question. I'll remove my objection. Are there objections maintained? Hearing none, the CS previously moved as before us as a working document for the committee. Representative Seaton, we did the heavy lifting here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee for the opportunity to hear the bill today. House Bill 298 is addressing an issue where we have a very cumbersome tax that in the net operation for sand and gravel operations gains the state very little money. It's very cumbersome because it's a profit state based tax, which means that every single use of sand or gravel, the end use has to be qualified as what the profit portion is on that and then back calculated and tracked. So it's a very cumbersome way for the calculation to be made. Also, it requires each pit to have separate schedules. So the fiscal impact of this, as you have in the fiscal note, is about $300,000. But if this was maintained in status, it's about $150,000 per year administrative cost. And the other thing is that about, and you'll have testifiers tell you today, somewhere between 50 and 80% of most of the operations, sand and gravel, goes into public works projects. So it turns out that the public works projects, which we fund through the legislature or through municipalities, end up paying almost all of the tax through those project costs. And so this has well been defined as a nuisance tax, and I just want to let you know that we did check to make sure that there would be no unintended consequences on municipalities. There's seven municipalities that have severance taxes, but the basis for their tax is not the this tax. So eliminating this tax from applying from sand and gravel operators will not impact municipalities or their ability to collect tax. And the only other thing is we've had testimony from the Department of Revenue that they could much more efficiently and profitably utilize their auditors in the other sections of the mining tax instead of sand and gravel. And if there's questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Sure, Representative Costello, our DNR subcommittee chair, has made note of that $150,000 reduction in costs in DNR, and I'm sure they'll fight for that.
The equivalent of one staff.
Do you think, Representative Seaton, that the Matsu Borough has pushed this gravel tax in the past? I'm sure others have. Is this, do you have any fears that this might leave an opening for local governments to say, well, this is a tax industry, we won't feel it, they've been paying it from the state, we'll charge it?
Mr. Chairman, I haven't heard any implication of that, and I don't think that there's any. Those municipalities can have a severance tax, but the basis of those taxes are not the same as this profits-based tax, which is very complex and hard to administer. And so I'm not at all worried that someone would duplicate this tax on a local level.
Never underestimate the local government, we'll leave your trust on the record, and we'll leave my skepticism on the record. Any questions for Representative Seaton? We have a lot of people that testify. Why don't you stay in place if you'd like, and we'll let folks join you. That way you'll be here to respond without having. We'll start work on the list of people signed up. I don't know who is here and who's not, so if you're... Chime in if you're over the line, and come up if you're here. Start with Dale Mormon. Welcome, sir.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the House Finance Committee. My name is Dale Mormon. I'm the president of Anchorage Sand and Gravel. Course and hate located out of Anchorage. I wish to thank you for the opportunity to address your committee today on House Bill 298. AS&G, as I call it, has been in the business of mining gravel since 1938. We provide a lot of different products made out of sand and gravel, including just regular sand and gravel, but concrete, asphalt aggregates, block, precast concrete, specialty sands like for the airport, Anchorage International Airport or Elmendorf Air Force Base, and a host of other construction related products, activities. Excuse me, for some reason I think I'm coming down with something.
This building.
Yeah, cool. Okay. AS&G is in favor of passage of House Bill 298 to exempt that would exempt the tax on income related to the sand, gravel, quarry rock, and other market worth products for four reasons. First is the amount of revenue, as you've heard, is receiving the state is receiving from collecting on the tax is less than or at best equal to probably the cost of the state really collecting it. It's a revenue-neutral tax. Over the years, for them to do this work, they have to perform numerous audits. It's very complicated. It takes a lot of their time, and it takes a tremendous amount of our time. The second item is the tax is very burdensome to producers. A great deal of the time is required to gather and generate the necessary information. For filing the tax return, much less for an audit. The current thinking of the Department of Revenue Auditing Division is that fair market price should be determined for each product. In the case of ASNG, we make in a range of 20 to 30 different types of products every year. Some of them are very small quantities, but higher value. Some of them are very are kind of the generic commodities that you use in road construction. When we're audited, the time requirements and expenses is quite significant. Our last audit took almost 18 months. It cost ASNG in excess of attorney fees and part-time of well over $50,000. Just with complying with requests for information and, you know, all the various meetings that we participated in. The third point is the mining tax as it relates to sand and gravel is very ambiguous and inconsistent. As we've mentioned, ASNG is required to figure out fair market value for 20 to 30 products, different products. Other commodities, for instance, such as oil, or gold, silver, zinc, or coal, have indexes that you can pretty easily find on a national level along the West Coast and other places, whereas the fair market value for gravel is local. And the various gravel producers in the state have very different processes and for making gravel. For instance, many of the people that produce gravel are contractors and make just what they need for a project. And so what they charge themselves is different than what we would make it and we would resell to someone else. So determining the fair market value is really is at the root of the problem with the way the mining tax. This is what the auditors, the producers struggle with, and the amount of tax paid on one type of product can vary significantly for the same product between different producers. The way it is interpreted, it's very difficult for Department of Revenue for their auditors to understand what we do. And finally, governments, state, local, state, and federal, are the end user. For ASNG last year, it varies between 65 to 70% generally, and it can be higher depending on if there's a big project that's like a school, or if it's a road project next door that our materials go into on an annual basis. But it runs between about 65 and 75%. And yes, the cost of the mining tax, once we finally figure it out, is a cost that is figured into the cost of when we price our gravel. In summary, the mining tax is a non-productive tax. It's burdensome, time-consuming for both the state and the producers. And it is inconsistent just because there's no markets and indexes for it. And that's some of the reasons that feel that we should support the House Bill 298. Thank you.
What's the bigger issue for you? Is it the money or the bureaucratic nuisance?
The amount of time and effort that we put into it is just gets to the point of ridiculousness. The money, nobody likes to spend extra money, but we spend way more money sometimes in just all the audit requests. And the time and effort, I don't think the $50,000 came from one of our guys, from our controller as an estimate, but I don't think it took into time all the meetings I sat through with attorneys, with the audit department's effort. So it's the inconsistency, and it is not an easy tax to figure out.
Representative Gettenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mostly we've been talking about sand and gravel. That's easy. Quarry rock, probably just rip rock.
Well, quarry rock, not all markets are blessed with having deposits of sand and gravel. So many places they have to use rock in place and they crush it down to make the products that they need. You can make sand out of a big rock. It just takes a lot of effort.
What would marketable earth come out
of? I believe that it has been interpreted to be peat.
That's that valuable valley land and all these subdivisions and acreage. That's enough. Anyway, I'm sorry for digressing on that. Any other questions for Mr. Mormon? Representative Guerra?
Thank you. So if we waive the the mining tax, does your company pay any other state taxes?
Yes, we pay state income tax.
The corporate income tax?
Yes, we do.
Okay, thanks.
Any other questions? Thank you, sir. We don't usually do introduction of guests here, but one of my constituents and a distinguished public leader in the local level is here, and I'd like my colleague, her former colleague, to introduce her.
Mr. Chairman, members of House Finance, it's my pleasure to introduce the chairman of the Anchorage Assembly, a friend of mine for many years. She served our community for decades, first 10 years on the school board, and I'm sure many years prior to that with her kids in local school activities. After those 10 years of service on the Anchorage School Board, she ran and was elected to the Anchorage Assembly, where we served for multiple years together. She's a great community advocate, a wonderful mother and wife, and it is my pleasure on behalf of the co-chair to introduce our friend, Ms. Debbie Osiander.
Welcome. Next, we have up Dave Cruz.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Seaton.
Thank you. As the testifier is coming out, I just wanted to clarify that the elimination of this mining tax does not influence the royalty that is paid to DNR on sand and gravel that's removed from state land. So just to make it clear, this is not removing all, all royalties or anything that are generated from sand and gravel.
Thank you, Representative Seaton. Mr. Cruz, another constituent. This is a rarity to have so many in one day.
Thank you, Chairman. I just want to address the committee here. My name is Dave Cruz. I'm president of Cruz Companies in Alaska. We're engaged in heavy civil construction, oil field, and tug and barge operations. The majority of work that Cruz Construction does is heavy civil public works projects. So lots of state jobs, that's what we like, and I'm coming out in support of HB 298. One of the reasons is on the tax, all we're doing is passing the tax back to DOT. It's a cumbersome tax, it's hard to calculate, and like the previous speaker said, on our projects we make just enough material to finish the job, maybe a little extra just in case we get into trouble. So it's not, and it varies depending on what type of project we're on, what we're making. The tax is cumbersome, the auditing, we spend a lot of time in our office trying to decipher it, and the revenues that it generates, I don't believe is enough to justify the expense. One thing that's interesting that was pointed out, and you have to remember the gravel, it's not a traded commodity, so what I sell it for on a project may not be what my competitors sell it for on a project, or maybe I'm selling it too cheap to get the project. But depending on what it is, I think that we would save money and we could use our time, revenue time, to determine this and better served in other purposes. So again, I'm just here to support HB 298. I appreciate to see this from the public sector, see you guys take something on that will, probably save us some money in the long term, and I'm available to answer any questions.
Don't see any. Thanks for coming down here, sir. Mr. Bryce, and jump in anytime, Representative Seaton, if you want to add anything.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. My name is Sam Robert Bryce. I'm president of Bryce Incorporated in Fairbanks, Alaska. We operate Brownsville Quarry between Fairbanks and North Pole. It's a basalt rock quarry, as well as it has sand and gravel deposits on the property. So we make numerous products kind of similar to Anchorage Sand and Gravel, 30-plus products in any given year. Between riprap all the way down to sand and sanding chips. On some years, the products are left in stockpile. On some years, the products get sold. So at the end of the day, we're in support of this bill just because it's extremely burdensome and complex to figure out at the end of the year what it is that we owe with all the products. And again, it's a relatively small part of our businesses. We sell to the public, to the general public, as well as supporting public works projects in the interior, on the North Slope, as far away as the border. But at the end of the day, why we support the bill is it takes a lot of effort to try and figure out what it is that we owe at the end of the year. And then when we figure it out, it's included in the cost of our projects products. So Alaskans, we sell strictly to Alaskans. So it's either getting sold to the general public or to a public works project. It's extremely burdensome to figure that out. And then when you do get audited, we got audited in 2007, 2008. Just like Anchored Sand and Gravel, it was over a year gathering the data. We had to hire an outside CPA firm because we didn't have enough staff on staff to deal with the depth of the questions. It cost us over $35,000 to answer the audit. And for 2 years, the mining tax during those 2 years from our quarry was less than $10,000. So it's just a lot of cost, a big burden, and not much return to the state. So that's why we support it. Thank you very much.
Questions for Mr. Price? Welcome. Good to see another old friend here. Ben Northey.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, my name is Ben Northey. I'm president of Kolaski, Inc. We're a heavy civil road builder in the state, as well as a sand and gravel producer. So I won't repeat a lot of what's been said by our competitors and friends here and colleagues, but some of the questions that were asked in the last committee were, would this affect jobs? I thought that was an interesting question. One consistent advertisement I see in all the papers is looking for our coveted green visor folks. So we can assure you that no jobs will be lost by this. We'll put them to better use in other things. But a representative is asking me about the percentage of our work to do public works. I would say that's upwards of 80%. So those sand and gravel minerals we're removing, this imposes tax, will be passed right on in the form of concrete or asphalt or in that road or that airport. It'll just be passed from one side to the other. That'll vary between producer to producer depending upon how its costs are. So to give you a percentage, it's almost impossible, but we'll say that's a cost. We all pride ourselves in knowing our costs, and unfortunately we have to pass this on to customers when they get to be onerous. So we really appreciate the support thus far for this bill and hope it continues to press through. So anything we can do to support you, we welcome that.
Any questions for Mr. Northey? Thanks. And we have a limited number of people. There were literally scores of folks that have written to the on this and it would have come, but they decided just to send the A-team, from what I understand.
Well, several of those are my folks, and they pleaded with us to get this pushed through because they'd much rather be more creative and productive with their work versus
this. I understand. So thank you for taking the time to be here. So thank you, Mr. Northey. I think the last person we have is Mr. McKinnon. Although, you won't be the last if somebody else raises their hand. We wanted to have you a chance to anchor this.
Thank you. For the record, John McKinnon, Executive Director of the Associated General Contractors, and I will admit the previous people that testified are members of the AGC.
Look, they're going with the open shirt.
I can fix that, Mr. Chairman. Sorry. You need to turn these fans up a little bit and cool it off.
I just wonder if you were trying to show off a gold chain or something.
Next time, I'll do that.
Please proceed with that digression, which I apologize.
kind of break the ice there, too. Mr. Chairman, committee members, thank you for the opportunity to testify today, and thank you for hearing this bill. I'm not going to talk about the technical merits of this piece of legislation, but just a little bit of chronology of how we got to where we are today and how this bill came to be. Last spring, one of my contractor members in Fairbanks received an audit request letter from the Department of Revenue. 2 pages long, it listed 19 specific items that were required of the auditors that filled a couple of banker boxes and took weeks to compile. After I listened to his talk and ranting on the phone and looked into it, I kind of recognized that we've got a problem here, that there ought to be a simpler way to deal with this thing instead of the way the tax was. I approached the Department of Revenue last summer looking for a way to simplify the whole tax. You know, we're talking tons mined, pennies per ton paid, but a very complex process to determine what is paid. The Department of Revenue was very cooperative on this, and when they looked into it, discovered that there was relatively little revenue received to the state, something on the order of $200,000 to $250,000 a year in revenue. 180-some firms are required to file the tax because of their operations. 17 of them pay that tax. You've heard from other people testifying how much effort they go into calculating the tax, how much effort is even extraordinary. More effort has gone into the audit process. With the cooperation of the Department of Revenue, we started calling this a nuisance tax and came up with a way to fix it. And it was the recommendation of them and a concurrence of the industry that the simplest solution to all of this was an exemption. It's clear that sand and gravel, marketable earth, quarry rock, all of those products that go into the aggregate industry are different than other minerals. For example, you can't go out on land that's open to entry and file a claim for sand and gravel or marketable earth. You can go out on that same land and file a claim for gold or coal or zinc or silver. There's definitely a distinction between those products right from the beginning. Working with the Department of Revenue and the administration, we came to where we are today, a bill to actually exempt that because it's clearly been determined by all of us that this is a nuisance tax. So what appears on the surface to be a real self-serving piece of legislation that benefits the construction industry actually has got some broad-based public benefit in that typically the public pays for this tax many times over in the cost of the product. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sean, you've been around this a while. I'm going to ask you, do you know the history of this, why it was put in place? How long has it been in? And
my understanding is this came into the original legislation from, I believe, 1953, which I was born then, but not very old. it was included because in those days, Alaska was building out, and sand and gravel was a major industry in the state, but most of the processing that is done today wasn't done then. And the other part of it is very few people in those days were filing the return. There is a $40,000 de minimis level in here where if you make less than $40,000 in your operations, you pay no taxes, you still file. About 5 years ago, the Department of Revenue went on an effort to get people that weren't filing out of ignorance, they weren't filing, get them to file. And there was quite an uproar then about having to file and the impact and the effort it took to file.
Representative Edgman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. John, I appreciate the testimony. Is there any applicability, and perhaps a question for the bill sponsor if it gets down to it, any applicability to village corporation lands? And I ask out of some personal experience. I'm a member of village corporation board, and we harvest gravel, and then we sell it for public works projects and so forth. But is there any relationship at all between an example like that?
Through the chair, Representative Edgman, yes, there is. When we... An earlier version of trying to fix this, we were looking at this, like, you know, pennies per ton severance tax, something simple. And it turned out that through ANCSA, the regional corporations own those subsurface rights. And ANCSA gave them the ability to use a full depletion allowance in there, so essentially they pay no taxes on the gravel that's mined. They still have to file the returns. That was one of the reasons why we went this route, because of what it would do if we'd gone a severance tax on those. The regional corporations own the subsurface rights. The village corporations mine those, and technically, the village corporations, anyone operating from that pit, files the return. The owners of the pit file the return. So you get multiple returns from the same pit.
Okay, thank you.
So this is not a negative impact to them. It's actually a positive.
Any other questions for Mr. McKinnon? One thing I, this is one bite at a time on this, but one thing that irritates me just while we're talking about the cost of public construction is when we're paying right-of-way costs from DOT, another government entity charges DOT, they're in there right along with private landowners, and that's almost counterintuitive to common sense, you know, unless it was a university lands trust or a mental health trust where they had a responsibility to maximize, but if it's the university or another state agency, I find that kind of nonsensical, but that's out of these guys' realms, but it adds to the cost of our construction projects. But we'll just bite off all we can chew for today, but that's something to think about as we're going to be stretching scarcer dollars, and government shouldn't be the one with a handout at every step of the way. As you say, and it's going to be less relevant than it's federal dollars because that's a shrinking number, and maybe when it's not 90%, maybe when it's 50%, it's a little more relevant. Maybe we'll be forced to make better decisions. But I think you and I might have talked about this before. I'm not sure.
Representative Stoltz, I think you and I have talked about a number of those frustrating issues when it comes to the cost of a lot of public construction and dealing with other entities.
Is there any other questions for Mr. McKinnon? Thank you, sir. Are there any other members here that wish to add anything? Any folks from the teleconference network, OffNet, or at any of the LIO sites? We will, to progress this bill, we'll close public testimony. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the testifiers have amply explained what the problems are and what this solution is. One thing that I would just like to put on the record is one of the concerns was that gravel islands built offshore for oil exploration, was this going to be something where you were using large quantities? And it turns out that gravel islands are on the lease. You're using gravel off of the lease, so this doesn't apply to those situations anyway. So there is no exemption here for large masses of gravel being used for gravel islands because they wouldn't pay this tax anyway.
Any other questions? Representative Newland.
Mr. Chair, Representative Seaton, I see we've got some information here from one of the companies that's currently being audited by DOR, Department of Revenue. How do you see ongoing audits with DOR occurring? Because we get rid of this tax, are they just going to discontinue audits? Are they going to still audit on for taxes due, or how do you see that playing out?
Thank you, through the chair, Representative Newman. The change in the fiscal note that you have before you represents the change in the date going back to January 1st instead of the fiscal year going to the calendar year, which is, I don't know if
we... a legal requirement of audit people for a tax we're not going to collect. I think that was a good cleanup is that your question?
And I'm not sure if that's your question, but I want to explain that first. But I think your question is, is there a retroactivity to go back and cancel the ongoing audits? That's not in this bill. I don't know what that situation would be.
And, Mr. Chair, that was kind of my concern, is where this company is currently going back, is being audited for 2 years back, so prior to January 1. My general feeling is if we're going to get rid of this, let's just get rid of it. I don't know why we would have ongoing audits of the personnel there. But it's just a question that came up because they are ongoing audits and they're going to have to be dealt with in one way or another.
Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to say that I think Joanna Bales or the Department of Revenue could address that or Department of Law about going back and, us interfering with ongoing audits or things that are already there. I'm not commenting one way or the other, but I'm just not the right person to be able to.
We normally get a list of the department of people online. I didn't get one of those today. So I didn't get a chance for the departments to declare their neutrality. Is there anybody from Department of Revenue online listening?
Sorry, Mr. Chairman. I thought that the Department of Revenue Tax Division was going to be on.
We'll make a presumption that absence is a lack of interest and concern. maybe be an unfair one, but that's one I'm going to operate under.
And Mr. Chairman, we've been in close contact with the division, and you know they see this as a nuisance tax, and they would rather spend their audit time on more productive efforts, and they've told us that directly. So that doesn't mean they're supportive, but they have been involved in the generation of the bill.
That's probably too big a stretch to get an endorsement of a bill through the legislature, so we'll just leave it. Any other questions for Representative Seaton? Representative Newman.
Mr. Chair, maybe, generally when we close out hearings on this, it's the individual recommendations, maybe a recommendation of the committee that any ongoing audits be terminated.
Well, that'd probably be more, a letter of intent probably would be a vehicle for that. And if you'd like to take a stab at drafting one, that can be offered. That can be offered all the way up to the time we're on the floor. That's, I believe, under our rules. I can check that. We can check with for procedure on that, but that's one option. Yeah. And certainly I'd want you to be the person working with that, Representative Seaton, as the sponsor. If we feel it's necessary, we can pursue it through that avenue. I don't want to try to craft a letter of intent right here on the fly when we're trying to pass this good bill out and maybe even get out of it a little early.
Representative Dugan.
Mr. Chairman, I would just note that if we had a telephone, we could call them up and ask them. It's entirely possible that their intent is to just abandon it, which would be a smart thing to do.
I talked to somebody from Revenue, and they said Ms. Bales was going to be listening in today. So we can't drag them here unless I'm not going to subpoena people here to give us fiscal note information. But we can leave it at that. If we can come up with something creative, Representative Seaton, that certainly is an option to bring a letter of intent to the floor. Any other questions? I think we've gone over the fiscal note already. Any amendments to this bill? Hearing none. I think, were there any concerns about the fiscal note? I think we've vetted those. Okay. So, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move from Committee CS for House Bill Number 298, Finance, Version 27-LS1263-B, Bullock 2612, with accompanying fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
Are there any objections? Hearing none, this bill's moved out of committee. With not having the other bill, the other resolution in possession, this is a shorter day. I'm sure everybody will be disappointed we're not going until 4 o'clock today. Next, tomorrow's day is your agenda, Mr. Co-Chair. All right. We do have one administrative matter before we leave, too.
Okay. Wednesday, Department of Revenue presentation on FY13 revenue forecast and state savings account and budget reserves overview.
And we can ask, Mr. Co-Chair, we can ask Revenue whether or not they like the bill we passed.
The bill's previously heard.
That, I believe, we have a birthday. Mr. Co-Chair, did you have some?
Ellen. She turned 29 today. Again. You know what? Happy birthday. You're going to sing Bryce Young's music? Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Helen. Happy birthday to you. I can't remember that day. Can you? No.
Any other matters to come? Albert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Not to belabor the point, but Helen, see, we didn't plant a cell phone on you and have it ring. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other matters come before? So we're adjourned until 1:30 tomorrow.